Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
Back and now, more sugary scented than ever before. We did that for you guys. We thought you'd enjoy it. We smell like Jelly Bellies. It was a special. It was on sale at Walmart. It's the Digital Graveyard.
Wow, you were really stretching for that. Yes, this is the Digital Graveyard, a nerdy podcast where just two guys nearing our 30s just talk about stuff that's unimportant to many, but important to us.
Yes, and before we go further, it's worth mentioning that not all the jokes will be zingers. There we go. I am one half. I am Eric Graves, and with me as always,
You got Bobby Digital here. We are recording today on January 10th, 2021.
If the audio sounds a little bit better, it's because we're trying out a new setup. We are currently in Digital's basement of his house that he owns with money, and we are setting up with just one microphone right now. We're doing a panoramic recording. Hopefully it sounds a little bit better than the Skype recordings that we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. And if not, well, oh well.
Yeah.
Because we're out of ideas.
Yeah, we're still workshopping like the best way to record, but overall I'd say we're trying, and that's what's important right now.
Yeah, it's all the good Lord asks of us.
Yeah, I just noticed you were just looking around the basement. I don't think you've really been in here.
No, not since you've decorated. It's nice. I mean, I've seen a lot of this stuff because we've lived together before, you know, but obviously you didn't stop collecting, so there's a lot of new stuff too.
No, yeah. Right now I'm very much in a phase of like, I'm debating about like selling a bunch of stuff and just kind of moving some other stuff in.
Sure.
But yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. I guess, yeah, we always like to start our show with some pleasantries, some things that we've been doing. We haven't talked since 2020.
We haven't. No, our last recording was, what was it, January 26th, I think?
Yeah, a day or two after Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. December 26th, I meant to say, yeah. But yeah, and pretty much nothing eventful has really happened in that time.
Oh, really? Nothing eventful?
Not that we would talk about, I don't think.
Yeah. The stuff that we are not educated enough to really be talking about on this. For me, though, one big thing, my comic shop is doing like a buy one, get one on everything.
Oh.
So I cleaned up. I got things like the Batman, the Three Jokers.
Nice.
I don't know if you know that whole story.
No, is that part of the death metal thing or what?
So, like, years ago, Geoff Johns teased the idea that there's not one Joker, but there are three.
I remember that. It was after their Villains Month with the Joker's daughter. There was kind of the implication that there were multiple Jokers. Because Joker's face got cut off, but they were still doing a Villains Month comic for Joker.
Yeah.
And Joker's daughter's comic had something about some other Joker. Maybe it was the end of Death of the Family that implied that there were multiple Jokers. I don't know. So the origins have been talked about for a while.
Yeah.
Of this kind of theory that the Joker is multiple people.
Yeah. So, what it was is that Batman sat on the Mobius chair, which is like a thing that exists on Apocalypse.
Yep, I remember that too.
Yep.
I have that comic.
Yep, and he asked, like, what is the identity of the Joker, and the chair answered back, like, which one?
Yeah, I remember that one. Yep. So it was all part of that nebulous sort of New 52 convergence, like, thing that happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
Back the last time I was really keeping up to date on the DC. So that was nice. That was a nice bit of like knowledge that I actually had prepared for.
Yeah. So the three Jokers is kind of all that coming together is just like, yes, there are three Jokers over time. That's how you kind of explain how in one issue the Joker is very like serial killery, I'm gonna rip off your face kind of acting.
Yeah.
Whereas another one, he just like has wacky gadgets and he's gonna just rob a bank.
Yeah, and the other one where he's like, you know, an anarchist trying to overthrow the government and stuff. It totally makes sense that they would like, because the Joker has been a very varied and storied person. This also, in a way, remedies what even Alan Moore kind of acknowledged was like the mistake of the Killing Joke by giving the Joker one origin.
Yeah.
Now we can kind of have, well, okay, that was one Joker that had that origin. What about the others, you know? So it is in a way... And
they really lean on that story.
Yeah.
Because they try and be like, yes, one of the Jokers is that Joker from the Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones, like, one of them is, like, the classic, like, OG one where he's not, like, funny.
Yeah.
He just looks like a fucking clown.
Sure. Like... Right.
In fact, he makes a point of saying, like, it hurts to smile. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't.
Oh, gosh.
But, like, the entire book is filled with just, like, Joker's, like, history that everyone forgets about. Like, there's a character named Gaggy, who's, like, a character who was invented in the 50s to be, like, a little sidekick. Where it's just a little person dressed up as a court jester.
Jesus. Like... Joker has had a lot of that, though, too, man. I've always kind of wished that... Because that was always a thing that... We're starting the show off talking about the Joker, but there's perfectly... It's a perfectly fine thing to start a show off talking about, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Something that always kind of bothered me about the Joker is that he's clearly insane, so how does he keep finding people to work for him, you know? Well, if there's one Joker that's just this, like, clown prince of crime who is willing to pay some hired goons to dress up like clowns and rob a bank, hey, that's fine. No, of course I'm gonna have, get that job, you know? But if you have, like, the Dark Knight, which kind of answered this question for me about, is like, oh, it was a bunch of lunatics that he kind of sprung from a lunatic asylum and brainwashed and doing his business with that. Of course, they didn't really spend a lot of time dealing with that. It sounds like this is kind of, there's one Joker that absolutely does need to spring a bunch of crazy people from a mental asylum to get to find people to work for him. But one Joker is totally going to post an ad on whatever that bar that all the villains hang out at is, you know?
Yeah.
Say, hey, anybody doing anything this weekend? I need to rob a giant banana cream pie from this, like, Girl Scout cookies or something. Like,
yeah. So, like, the three main characters in this book are Batman, Batgirl, and Red Hood. Because they're the three Batman characters who have been the most victimized.
I mean, it's not a contest you want to win. But out of all of the Batman characters who have been wronged by the Joker, I'd say those three would be the one. Because this isn't Batman Beyond canon. I'm going to ignore Tim Drake, who literally got brainwashed to become the Joker.
Right.
Which is still, like, horrifying to a child.
If anything, I say that is worse than the Jason Todd.
Just, like, getting killed to death? Beaten to death? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's not a contest, like I said. It's pretty close. But, yeah, I'm going to agree with that a little bit. Those three are the ones to write the book about, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, and then it's, and the book pretty much ends with just, like, let's clean it up, like, now there is just the one Joker. Like, the entire plot of the book is that the three Jokers are like, we want to make the perfect Joker.
It's Joker, but Highlander.
Yeah.
There can be only one.
Yeah, they want to make the perfect Joker, so, like, they're like, you know who'd make a good candidate for that? Red Hood.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, yeah. They're even like, you even, like, kind of want to be us, so you call yourself the Red Hood, which was, like, us. Like, to begin with.
Come on, guy.
Yeah. But anyways, one of the other books I picked up, and I knew this about Bruce Timm.
Sure.
Those of you, Bruce Timm is one of the artists on
for the Batman animated series. Is what he's most famous for, but he's done a lot of, like, animated movies since then. And, well, just a lot of animation in general, but a lot of specifically DC Justice League Unlimited, Batman the Animated Series-esque.
Yeah.
Not related, they're not canonical, but a lot of them are... He's doing that like, martial arts one that's coming out, right?
Yeah, he does have a book coming up, but I picked up one of his, personal, like, art books that he sells, right?
Ooh.
And I knew he was, like, pervy. Ugh. Like, nowadays. The book is called The Big Tease, right?
Ugh.
It's called The Big Tease. So immediately I just thought, like, oh, they're kind of, like, they're going to be, like, classy, like, ooh, you can maybe see a little bit,
like,
but not all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. You open the book and it is just straight porn.
Oh, man. How... filthy, and are you done with it, and can I borrow it just to see how upsettingly filthy this... I want to know how properly upset I should be, Bobby.
Oh, man. And then it's really funny reading it, too, because some of them I'm like, I can tell, like, this was supposed to be Mary Jane or something.
Wow.
But you changed one aspect to make it like, oh, no, it's not. I don't want to get sued by Marvel or DC.
I
knew it about him because I do know this is, like, the fourth of his books. All of his, like, art books nowadays go for like hundreds of dollars.
Sure.
I was able to get this one for like 30.
Nice.
So I was like, I need it because I'm never going to get one of those other ones.
No, exactly. I absolutely would. If I had it, like, cause I know that the, cartoonists are often like perverts, kind of a lot. vis-a-vis Pixar's manifesto that says give every mom a dump truck ass. But I know that this is going to ruin the childhood of somebody listening right now. The guy who did the Donald Duck comics got this weird, like, when he retired, he started doing weird, like, duck erotica.
Yep.
And just, like, they're all, like, anthropomorphic ducks like Donald and Daisy, but they're in just, like Caligula and weird, like, very, very not Disney-appropriate, like, settings. This sort of, like, gives notes to that a little bit. Yeah. Like, is the only reason anybody get in? The only reason anybody get into cartooning or animation, so that you can eventually retire and draw a bunch of like erotic softcore porn of your characters.
Yeah. But yeah, like,
inquiring minds want to know.
Like it is like if you Google search Bruce Timm with like the safe search off, you're more than likely gonna find like Harley Quinn porn. Mostly.
Safe search off, you say, just so I know what not to do later. After we're done recording this, thank you, Bobby.
Yeah.
I can go back to my chaste life of virtue.
Yeah. But, I mean, other than these books, there's a bunch more I got, but I haven't really been checking out too many shows. I've been doing a lot of repeat viewing on things.
Yeah.
Like, you got here, I was watching New Girl.
Yeah, yeah. Because who doesn't love Winston Bishop?
Oh, I thought you were blanking on... Jessica Day's real name.
I was going to call him Winnie the Bish, and then I realized that that's actually just a nickname that Coach calls him in one episode.
Yeah, so yeah.
Lamorne Morris is great, man. The entire cast is great.
I loved watching him in Woke.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
And that one scene that he's in The Guild.
Oh, yeah, he was in The Guild.
He is a security guard for the... They're not Blizzard, they're something else, but he's a security guard for that company that makes the game in The Guild. Yeah, that was before he got the job in New Girl. I recognized him from it. It was wild.
Yeah.
That's a great show. I guess I've been rewatching a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah.
The last few weeks... And it has been a while since we've recorded, so I'm sure I've watched stuff that I've forgotten about. I watched a documentary about David Arquette.
Oh, okay.
He's wrestling now.
What?
Yeah. Well, he has been for a while. He has been since, like, 2000, but it was, like, because he was in a movie about, like, a guy who wanted to be a wrestler in like, 2000.
So then he did it.
Right. Well, because he's a wrestling fan, like, I guess as a, like, publicity stunt. This was, you know, in 2000, like, to 2010, I say, it was, like, the era of, like, that was the year that... These were the years that Donald Trump and Vince McMahon were shaving each other's heads on stage.
Sure.
It was the era of like the bigger than life gimmick of wrestling. You know, like the Hulkamania, eat your vegetables, brush your teeth, kind of stuff. That was done, and it was all this like these big like how much attention can we get to these matches, right?
Right.
They would have like I remember Rob Zombie like hosted a night of WCW once when I was still like watching wrestling. But this was like in the 2000s. David Arquette, he considers this like what ruined his career in a lot of ways. Like he was in a movie that I don't know if it was a bad movie or not because I'd never even heard of it. But he was as a promotional stunt for this movie. He actually like wrestled. Like he was like the bad guy. He was playing like he teamed up with this one like big wrestler and was like that suit wearing guy that always comes in and he would wear like Ric Flair like super Liberace style.
Are you saying he teamed up with the Big Show?
No, not him. This was ECW, I think. It wasn't WWE.
Like WWE.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible.
me and Bobby aren't like wrestling fanatics, and I'm really worried that I'm gonna offend somebody by like how obvious it is that I don't know things about wrestling.
Yeah.
In this so I'll try and keep it brief. But basically, like a thing about wrestling that a lot of big fans were upset about is like wrestling's not Hollywood. It shouldn't be. Like, it shouldn't be like, yes, we all have kind of known for a very long time that the ends of matches were, like, sort of fixed. Like, they're sort of rehearsing ahead. We've all seen Glow by now. Saying that wrestling is fixed is not the inflammatory thing you say anymore. Mm-hmm. We all know that wrestling is pre-rehearsed. The outcomes are determined, but it's still a physical activity, and I think that's what a lot of people enjoy about it still, but...
Well, and that doesn't make it a bad thing. Like,
no, of course
like
not.
Plays are, obviously, we all know the ending, every character has their role, and that's what wrestling is at the end of the day.
A friend of ours, Johnny, took me to a local wrestling match, like, years ago. It was at First Avenue, which is a famous venue in Minneapolis, known for the Purple Rain movie, but they also have wrestling shows sometimes. There's the fact that you just learned America, and I loved it, dude. It's like watching a sport, but it's also like watching a play. Like, it's very theatrical. It's a lot of fun, and it is very physically. When you're not watching it on TV, when you're watching it live, it is a very physical, like impressive thing that these people are doing on stage.
For sure.
So I totally get why people like dedicate like their identities to wrestling. You know, and even though we all kind of know that it's theatrical, that still doesn't mean we tongue-in-cheek, wink-wink, nudge-nudge, Donald Trump's gonna shave Vince McMahon's head on stage, you know? Like, it's, like, the celebrity of it is something that it's a thin line that they cross. And David Arquette crossed that line. So the documentary is about, like, him trying to... He hasn't been acting! Like, it's him, like, okay, well, career change. I'm seriously going to learn how to be a wrestler. I'm 55. Like, I just had a heart attack. So he goes down to Mexico and starts, like, trains, like, street wrestling and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was actually a very incredibly interesting documentary about David Arquette, who isn't a particularly interesting guy, frankly.
Like, yeah.
It was just this one thing that he was doing that was just a very interesting subject of a documentary. Yeah.
I really only know him for the Scream.
Scream, yeah.
Yeah, the Scream movies.
Yeah, and marrying Courtney Cox as a result of that. He was also in Eight-Legged Freaks with Scarlett Johansson, which is one of her first movies ever.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, if you want a good wrestling movie, have you seen Fighting in the Family?
No, I have heard of that one, though.
Yeah.
That's like the semi-true story of, like, Paige, right?
Yeah, no, it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, watch that movie.
Wrestlers are incredibly interesting people.
And oh, for
it's
sure.
It's almost like now that GLOW has become so successful, and, I mean, well, really, The Wrestler starring Mickey Rourke, which kind of started this kind of realization that, like, wow, this is, like, the industry is almost more interesting than the actual, like, practice of wrestling.
Yeah, for real, though, yeah. No, because, yeah, in that show, in that movie, it kind of tells you how they find these people, the kind of training that they have to go through. Because, like you said earlier, like, it is real physically demanding work.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
we have and we've said it before on the show, we have friends who are, like, wrestling fanatics. And just, like, hearing anything about what goes on or people who literally, like, bands get into their minivans and drive around the country at these, getting paid like a couple of bucks for these like backyard wrestling shows and stuff. It's nuts, dude. It's absolutely insane. Like, but anyway, so yeah, the only like notable thing that I really, the only notable like new thing that I really watched, the last few weeks, what's been mostly consuming my time is I, started playing a couple new games. This month, the PlayStation Network made Shadow of the Tomb Raider free.
Okay, yeah.
And I realized that I've never in my life actually played a Tomb Raider game.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, I got them all.
I noticed as walking in. And you know, I wasn't a huge fan of Uncharted and that kind of like, oh, look, what am I supposed to do? Oh, hey, there's the same exact wear and tear on this rock wall that has been on all the other rock walls, indicating that I can climb up this rock wall.
Right.
So I guess I need to go there. Like, I've never been a fan of that kind of, like, gameplay. Yeah. But, damn, if it's not, like, a really, really compelling story so far, you know?
Yeah, I really like the reboot of Tomb Raider. I know a lot of people really shat on it because they really like the idea that Laura was already very accomplished and everything, and that's what these games are trying to be like, well, she's learning.
So is Shadow of the Tomb Raider, that's not the first reboot, right?
No, it goes, when they did the reboot, they just called it Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And then it's Rise of and then Shadows of.
Okay, so this is the third one.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, okay, that's fine. I'm not worried about, like, the canonical story.
I mean, the first one just pretty much be like, here's how she initially becomes a badass, and then the other two are like, continuing her learning to be a badass.
Yeah, I literally just downloaded it Friday, so I've only played it twice so far. So, but I'm you know, because I didn't not enjoy the Uncharted games. It's just not the kind of games that I prefer. You know,
sure.
I
really liked Uncharted 2.
Yeah,
which is everyone who likes Uncharted, they're like, 2's the best.
Yeah, and I mean, enough people like Uncharted, I'm not challenging it. I mean, I know it's a good game, and I know that, because, like, what was it? Horizon Zero Dawn had a lot of that similar gameplay, too, and I really liked Horizon Zero Dawn. It's just, I don't like chapter-driven games, but, I mean, that's another thing.
But, like, that, you mentioning Horizon Zero Dawn, a lot of games that are story-driven are really doing, like, what Uncharted, I think, really popularized.
Well, I think the difference between Horizon Zero Dawn and really the new God of War, too.
Yeah, that does that same, like, over-the-shoulder.
Yeah, with Uncharted is, yeah. it's Uncharted in an open world, like, sandbox. Like, yeah. that's really the only difference. Like, it's you can do all the same jumps and climbs and things that's Nathan Drake can do.
Yeah.
Nathan Drake has weapons that he can use. Like, it's not different. It's just that it's just Uncharted and Tomb Raider are, like, chapter event driven
but Tomb Raider's still pretty open world.
Is it really?
Well,
I just started, so.
Yeah, no, because, yeah, you'll do, like, the regular story, but, like, you can always backtrack to any, like, location and anything.
Well, then I can't wait to see what my thoughts are in another couple of weeks after playing this. But the other game that I wanted to talk about, because I did just start playing this one as well, and I know that if you haven't played it already, we're going to want to talk about it, because everybody else is talking about Hades.
Ooh,
which
okay.
is the new indie game this year right now.
My Switch has been, like, my indie machine, yeah. and I've downloaded Hades, but I've yet to, like, play it.
Have you played any of the other games from this studio?
I
think it's Big Huge Games or something? No, that doesn't sound right.
I can just look it up here real quick.
Maybe, but... or is it, like... Mega Gigantic or something like that.
Let's see, Hades.
Yeah. They also did Bastion.
Yeah, Super Giant Games.
Super Giant Games, thank you. They also did Bastion, which is the only other one that I played, but I bought all of them on a Steam sale, so I can play all their games.
Bastion, I do know.
Bastion was divisive, not because it's very short. Not a lot of people were like, not a lot of people went crazy for it, but I loved it because the narrator is amazing. But Bastion and Hades are Hades is the perfect successor to Bastion, because Bastion was kind of a little bit of, like, base building elements to it, but it was different weapons do different abilities. All the enemies are more or less the same, except their colors change. There's just hordes and hordes of enemies coming at you, and you just kind of, like, point and click and smash them up. So the gameplay of Hades is really essentially exactly the same thing. I think the thing that's impressing most people with Hades and Bastion 2 is that the story is told in such a uniquely different way.
Sure.
In that, in Bastion, it was everything that you do, there's a narrator that's constantly saying what you've just done after you've done it. So it's like... Yeah.
The Stanley Parable.
Kind of. It's like the opening is the kid's lying there unconscious, and he's like, the story starts with a kid, but first he's got to get up. So you hit the W, eventually you figure out that you gotta hit WASD, and then he says, like, the kid gets up. and then you start running around, and as he's running around, he says, like, oh, look at these guys. These are gas bags. You don't want to deal with them. Best take them out quick. And then the kid thinks to himself. And then you meet this narrator later on. And that is, like, the charming thing about Bastion that I loved. So you see, the story still progresses just like normal, but that little twist is just such a charming little thing about Bastion. They changed the complete way the story unfolds in Hades. And right. I don't know if... I haven't gotten very far at all yet. But basically, do you know the whole deal about Hades?
Like, in mythology? Or the
game itself? No, the game.
Okay, like
the
gameplay. I do know it's that, yeah, like...
It's Hades' son trying to escape from Hades.
Okay, yeah.
The story doesn't progress based on how far you get in the dungeons, right?
Okay.
The story progresses based on how many times you attempt to escape the dungeons.
Oh.
So the game keeps track of that.
So and if then, you're doing really well, like...
Well, I'm sure, because like I said, I haven't gotten very far. Right. I'm sure there will be story points that change once you get to certain distances, but I think it's a pretty randomly generated, like, dungeon each time.
Yeah.
But every time you die, because Zagreus, who's the Hades' son, he's the main character, he's a demigod. Every time he dies, he goes right back to the chamber of his father.
Sure.
Like, and then all the same NPCs are in this room, but depending on how many times you've attempted to go back into Hades and escape, they might have something new to say to you. Sure. So it's this weird way that the story progresses, and that it doesn't really it matters to a degree how far you get in the dungeons, but what matters more is how many times you just keep going back and keep going back and keep going back and doing it. And it's been, I don't know if it's my favorite game. I don't know if I love it as much as everybody else on the internet seems to, but yeah. it's been a very interesting experience. Like,
I mean, at the 2020 awards, it got 9 nominations. Insane. It won two best action game and best indie.
Dude, yeah, it was insane how the immediate accolades that this game got. And it is a beautiful game that plays very well. I think, like, what it does that a lot better than Bastion did, and I think that's it's getting the acclaim it deserves. Yeah. You know,
the other two games that this company is known for are Transistor, which I did play.
Yeah, and Rust.
No, it's called Pyre.
Pyre. Oh yeah, I've heard of Pyre too. I got all of them. I do want to play Pyre.
Really, I haven't played Pyre. The description says it plays like a fantasy version of basketball. And I'm like, okay,
weird.
But I know nothing about the game, so that may or may not be an accurate description.
Pyre or basketball?
Pyre.
okay, cool.
I've never played basketball.
I don't know enough about either.
But I think it's time we move on to some of the big news stories that have happened recently.
Sure, we're at a certain time. I don't know. It's a new setup, guys. almost at the halfway point. Sure.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start off with just like something I think is very funny. David Hasselhoff is putting up for auction a bunch of memorabilia, but one of the big items is from the SpongeBob movie, a giant model of Hasselhoff swimming through the water.
I've seen that model. It's not a human-sized model. It was a huge, it was a big model of David Hasselhoff they made for that movie.
Yeah, I want to say it's like 12 feet long.
Dude, like, the craziest thing about 14 this...
14 feet, yeah.
14 feet long. The craziest thing about this, to me, isn't that it sold at auction for as much as it did, which I don't know if you said it or not.
It hasn't sold yet.
It hasn't sold yet?
No. The auction is going on. At this point, it will be going on for about 8 more days.
Oh my god. absolutely. That's like a piece of Hollywood. Like, especially now that everybody who was a kid watching the SpongeBob movie is now legally allowed to vote. I'd say that, yeah, no, in this brave new future that we are currently living in, that is going to be a piece of Hollywood memorabilia that will go for a great deal of money. I can predict that right now. That's not shocking to me, even in the slightest bit. What's shocking to me is that David Hasselhoff has held onto this thing for like 12 years.
For real? No. Like, so
it's
so,
14 feet long, and it looks like you. That's it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. And the face it has is unsettling.
It is. It's like frozen in the worst smile ever. It's like David, could you make a face that is reminiscent of what a dolphin looks like at any time? Like, and he's like, okay, and like, yeah, that's what the thing looks like. It's terrifying
for real. And just the biggest, bluest eyes. No, so like you said, he got it right after the movie was made. Apparently, like, when they were, like, you know, striking the set and everything, he was just like, what are you guys doing with this? And they were just like, I don't know. Dude, he's like, can I have it?
Because that movie was so not like, I mean, SpongeBob's viewership was entirely children at the time.
Yeah.
Like, of course, like, that monstrosity wasn't going to be like Hollywood memorabilia then. But now that everyone who was a child watching the SpongeBob movie being adults now, I would pay money to see the giant David Hasselhoff. I would. If I was a franchisee of any Planet Hollywood in the fucking country, I would spend, I would say, name your goddamn price. Let me have this 14-foot Hasselhoff as the centerpiece of the ballroom of my Planet Hollywood Reno or wherever the hell. Like,
oh my god.
It'll be, we are the Planet Hollywood that has the 14-foot David Hasselhoff. Like, that makes sense. Yeah. Keeping this in your garage doesn't make sense to me.
No, yeah. He just kept it in his attic.
That's creepier.
Apparently in 2014, he did put it on auction, and after a few bids had gone through, he withdrew it so, like, he could keep it.
That's like, it's like, oh, what about his children? It's like, oh, we don't go into father's attic. That's where the demon Hasselhoff lives. Like, I don't, it's like, it sounds to me like, I know I keep focusing on like the weird, because the auction is the thing that's newsworthy right now.
Yeah.
But I keep focusing on like, it's like conversations that must have happened while having a 14-foot replica of yourself in your attic over the last like decade.
For real.
So weird.
Yeah, they call it Big Dave. But
Big Dave!
Right now, the
highest... That's where Big Dave lives. We mustn't go into the attic.
Right now...
And he comes alive when nobody's looking, just like Toy Story. Toy Story rules.
Oh my god, no.
That's Toy Story 5. They all get adopted by David Hasselhoff, and the biggest toy that exists, a 14-foot replica of the Hoff,
is... Oh my gosh, dude, no. So if Toy Story rules, like, existed, would, like, the giant figures at, like, the Mall of America, like, the giant, like,
the giant
Legos,
Lego men?
Would they come to life?
Oh my god, I think so.
Oh my gosh.
According to the Lego movie rules, then absolutely.
Oh man.
Those are living sentient things.
Oh, man, but, geez. Back to the story, though. Yeah, he's selling a total of 150 items. He believes that this figure and Kit from Knight Rider are going to be the two highest value.
Oh, of course he has Kit still. Yeah, for sure that's going to sell.
Yeah, he believes both are worth about $750,000. And I'm like, nah, Kit should be worth in the millions.
It totally should.
Yeah.
I think there were multiple Kits, though.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure there was only one Big Dave.
I mean, yeah, you got me there. There's only the one Big Dave.
Possible title for the episode, there's only one Big Dave.
Yeah. But right now, the highest bid on the Big Dave is $120,000. But he believes it will get $750,000 easy.
I'd say it has to get close, right? Like... It's still a lot of money, and you don't know how much it costs to make, but Jesus, like, there's nothing else in Hollywood that exists that's like this.
It even has, like, his hair and his freckles down perfect. Yeah. Like, it is straight up him.
Dude, I was a child when that movie came out. I was still subscribed to Nickelodeon magazine. I remember the details that went into the giant David Hasselhoff figure, dude.
Oh, man, no. Ah, man. Leave it to, like, SpongeBob to create such a weird piece of memorabilia. For, like, a joke in a movie. Like,
truly. Like, it was not even... It's a one scene.
Man. And a scene that only is funny if you were an adult watching with your kid.
Yeah.
Because, like, kids don't know who David Hasselhoff is.
He's got a really funny name. And that's, I think, when a lot of people our age learned who David... I mean, not everyone, because I'm sure a lot of people's parents watched Baywatch and Knight Rider and things like that. I don't think I knew who David Hasselhoff was before that, before the SpongeBob movie.
No, I definitely didn't.
Maybe
know.
He had, like, a joke on The Simpsons or something, because I know that there were a couple of jokes about him and how many shows he was on in the 80s. But, like, yeah. It's definitely... It feels good to talk about this sort of thing.
So dumb. But Hasselhoff has become kind of like a institution of Hollywood. Like, he doesn't appear in a lot of things, but everyone knows the name, and a lot of people just love him for being Hasselhoff.
There's so many weird... you got to imagine almost like a Stan Lee-esque, like, level of celebrity. When you think, like, you are in several... There are several things that you are famous for, and no one can take that away from you. And you've had several, like... And the rest is you're famous for being David Hasselhoff.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's...
A good comparison to that would be, like, say, Lou Ferrigno. Who, yes, he was the Hulk.
Yeah.
But has since just made appearances as Lou Ferrigno.
Tons of people, tons of celebrities get to that level, you know what I mean? But yeah, David Hasselhoff, you'd be hard-pressed to argue, like, anyone more fits that description than David Hasselhoff, you know? Like, he's certainly had his ups and downs in Hollywood, but yeah, he always... There's going to be someone willing to pay him to just show up and be David Hasselhoff in a movie. You know what I mean?
I can't even think of the last thing I saw. Well, he probably did a cameo in the Baywatch reboot.
Dude, he had a cameo in the goddamn Dodgeball movie just because it was a joke about how much Germans like David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
Like, it was one scene in that movie. That and the SpongeBob 14-foot replica of him are that's going to sum up his post Hollywood career, where now he's just a guy in Hollywood that just gets to do stuff. Like, you know,
oh no,
what I mean?
He was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
He was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Totally, dude.
Yeah, because Star-Lord was like, yeah, I make believe that my dad was David Hasselhoff.
Who else? But Stan Lee has had a career like that, you know, once he was done actually writing comics, he just got to be in things because people wanted him to be in stuff.
Yeah, for real.
You know? Like, it's a weird sort of niche that certain actors find, and it's nice when they're nice guys, but I'm happy when actors, like, get to just be sort of, like...
Yeah, just kind of be an icon for being who they are.
You did some really good acting, and now you just get to be normal for a while and don't have to worry about money all that much, although you still need to work. Like, you don't have to be... You get to work, so you don't have to be an asshole. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm... Kind of speaking to that, one reason he said that he's doing this big thing is because his expensive lifestyle.
Ah, see?
Yeah.
That always... Nick Cage had the exact same thing happen to him recently. And Nick Cage is another good example, although he doesn't cameo as much as he just does make really ridiculous movies. But that is, like... That's the thing. Like, a lot of these guys sort of have a weird transition where even though their expenses are still up here, their income's not coming in as much as it used to in the height of their career, and then they have to start doing weird stuff like this. And there's some really fun Hollywood stories that can come out of stuff like this.
Yeah, so he said that he was having to do spousal support payments to his ex-wife in the amount of $21,000 a month.
Classic Hollywood.
Although that went down, now he only has to pay her $5,000.
Okay,
which,
well.
Great, like, but then he said he himself still averages about $66,000 a month in spending and bills.
Yes, I mean, I already mentioned Nick Cage had to do something similar. Nick Cage, it was, I think, Cox and Crendor, another podcast, if you guys are listening, please like, retweet us or whatever, guys, we could really appreciate the tweets, but they went over what exactly Nick Cage had to sell when he went through a similar situation, and it was like 3 T-Rex skulls that he won at auction against Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. Like, he had to sell his albino king cobra that he used to guard his house.
Yeah.
Like, it just...
He tried to write snakes off as a, like, home protection.
Dude,
like,
exactly. Like, insane stuff like that. It's like, well, yeah, it's like, if you had unlimited money, look at where we're recording right now and all our ridiculous stuff. If we had unlimited money, we'd be so much crazier than David Hasselhoff and Nick Cage would.
Oh, for sure. Like, people joke, like, I have a basement dedicated to my video games, comic books, and all that, and I'm like, if I had the space for it, I'd have a room dedicated to each thing.
Oh, yeah, man. 100%. I'll tell you what I'll do with $1 million. It'll just make you angry, though, so why do you want to know? Like, anyway.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so, I mean, it sucks that he's got to do this to make ends meet, but all celebrities kind of go through this kind of stuff. Like, everybody's got to start, like, the dude from Motley Crue has done crap like this. Like, Gene Simmons has done stuff like this.
Well,
like,
especially if you're not getting steady work.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course, your residuals can only last you so long.
I won't blame anyone for not thinking this far ahead when they start their acting career, but this is something that a lot of celebrities go through, enough so that we can start noticing it as a trend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just, I don't think it's anyone's fault, really. It's just how humans adjust to changes like that. But if the worst thing that happens is you no longer have a 14-foot replica of yourself named Big Dave living in your attic that comes to life at night when nobody's looking, then I'm going to say... This is a net positive for David Hasselhoff. Like, and we're talking about him. There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, the dude is great.
You're gonna be fine, Dave. Just lay off the cheeseburgers, man. Yeah. It's totally all right.
Just give him to Big Dave. He needs it.
Give him to Big Dave. He's a hungry boy.
Oh, man.
Number one hungry boy, Big Dave.
All right, so our next news story is something that we've been talking on and on about this guy pretty much since we started. Oscar Isaac.
Before he even said it, I knew who it was going to be.
Like, and we actually talked about him being rumored to be playing Moon Knight, which now it is officially confirmed he is.
And you know what was, 'cause I feel like shortly after we recorded that, I felt really bad because we had specifically went out of our way to say it's rumored, nothing confirmed, and then it really kind of seemed like he was the only one that they were considering for the role. But now it's been officially considered.
Yeah. Like, I know at the time, like...
Not considered, confirmed. Yeah. He is going to be Moon Knight.
Yes. I know at the time, Keanu Reeves was also rumored.
He was... Yeah, but he was rumored... We talked about that, too. He was rumored for a lot of different roles, too.
Yeah.
And Oscar Isaac, in the Marvel Universe, not so much a lot of other things.
Yeah. Yeah, but, Oscar Isaac has been confirmed that he is going to play Moon Knight in the Disney Plus show for Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
This all came out because one of the lead cameramen, like, put on his Instagram, "Well, the secret is out. it's an honor to be a part of introducing a new character to the MCU, Moon Knight.
So the cameraman was the first one to reveal it?
Yeah. Not the director, not the writer, not even Oscar Isaac.
I'm sure nobody said anything about that. Wow.
Yeah. He's like, well, I guess it's out. But yeah, so I know a fair deal about Moon Knight. You?
No, not really. Remember, we publicly kind of revealed that I don't, in fact, know that much about Moon Knight on the episode we recorded about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're mostly going to do
I thought he was, like, an actor that was, like, fighting crime by night, and that's entirely not true. He's, like, a guy with multiple personalities who...
Nowadays, that's his interpretation. Oh. Like, at the start, it was that, like, yes, he was a rich dude. Just rich. He wasn't an actor.
Oh, really?
I think he... kind of like the Batman thing of, like, yeah, he came from old money.
He's Marvel's version of Batman. Everyone kind of knows that, but...
I mean, he's only Batman in the sense that, yes, he has money, and he spends it on making equipment that is moon-themed.
Yeah. But his power comes from the moon, which is why he fights at night.
Yeah, yeah. Like, some Egyptian god gave him his power... It's not even necessarily that he has powers, it's that, like...
He thinks he does.
He thinks he has powers. Yeah. And he does somehow keep coming back to life, so maybe he does.
Maybe he does.
But that's always kind of part of the question. I do love, like, in the more recent books, they tend to do this thing of, like, really play up, like, the humor of his character.
Yeah.
there's literally one where he's, like, put in a room with a dolphin tank, and there's one dolphin in it.
Yep.
And he's just like, well, I know what I have to do. And then, like, the next page, you see it's just bloody all over, and he's, like, eating the dolphin meat. And then a dude just opens the door, just like, what were you doing? And he's like,
the key was clearly inside the dolphin.
He's just like, no, we just wanted you to wait here.
That's going to be interesting. There is, to that extent, though, and we've talked about it, I mean, there's not much more to say about Oscar Isaac, because we've already been talking about him so much throughout the course of our careers, my God. But, like, the thing, and I haven't seen a ton of discussion about this. I've seen a little bit, but not as much as I think there normally would be about topics like this. How... is Moon Knight going to be portrayed vis-a-vis, or how is Oscar Isaac going to portray Moon Knight vis-a-vis mental illness as a concept? It's mm-hmm. something that, a real thing that people deal with in real life in a way on film that is not, and I mean, I'm sorry if this sounds a little too woke for some listeners, but like, this is something that movie studios right. need to consider, because yeah. any amount of people turned off by any concept of a movie is going to be money that they don't earn. Like, if people find the depiction of mental illness offensive in Moon Knights, how do you tread that line?
Yeah.
So as to not...
So as not to offend or not to pander yeah. or whatever.
Because yeah. there are certainly a lot of ways to respectfully handle mental illness. Horror movies have been walking that line for years of the sort of disrespectful kind of theatrical, like, portrayal of
like
people
Split.
Going crazy. Yeah. Or things like Fight Club, for example, about how it's like you don't realize until the very end of that movie that guy has been dealing with mental illness, and then you rewatch it and it's like, oh yeah, no, he's been crazy since the beginning. It's like how long he's been going crazy. Or like or even like The Shining to a degree, about like how somebody just slowly going insane, but yeah. but the signs were there from the very, very beginning.
Sure.
Not that The Shining, I think The Shining is a glowing example of what dementia is meant to actually look like. But nowadays, that's going to be, if it sounds like I'm spending a lot of time on this, it's because I genuinely think it's very difficult. There's a reason why we have stereotypical, like, crazy people in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that's very easy to write. So, like, it's very difficult to write out from the perspective of somebody who's not in control of their faculties.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's why a lot of people kind of look at a movie like Joker.
Yeah.
And some find it insulting in a way. But at the same time, it's like, but it's also, like, kind of the... I don't want to say the best, but I'm just going to say the best way we could, like, portray yeah. his, like, mental yeah. illness. Like,
see, like, how do... And then it goes
And then you kind of have to define what exactly he's got
yeah.
going on.
That's the other thing. You have to define what is exactly wrong with this person's brain. And that's something that I don't think Moon Knight has done in the comics, really. So...
Yeah. No. Yeah, in the comics, they really told this line of, like, he might be crazy, he might be being manipulated
yeah.
by this moon god.
Yeah. We know that... Deadpool is manic and talks to the audience, but what does that actually mean as his mental illness in terms of, like, a real person who acts like Deadpool?
Yeah.
That would be an incredibly advanced case of dementia and schizophrenia when he's talking to these people that aren't actually there, you know? He said, talking to a podcast for people on the internet.
yeah.
But, yeah, like, and the other pendulum, too, is we don't want to risk glorifying mental illness in a way as well, because a lot of people talk about what is that book, The Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, sure,
which is something that has, we don't know exactly what it is about this book that has led people to commit acts of violence, but they have. The guy who killed John Lennon, probably the most famous one being had a copy of Catcher in the Rye on him, you know.
Yeah.
But
that's one of those, like, I mean...
Yeah. You don't want to, like... Well, at the same time, you don't want to, like, glorify, like, somebody's, like, oh, somebody just crazy enough to go out and clean the streets, you know? Like the controversy surrounding so much of The Punisher, you know? Like, how many people have... How many, like, militias and
have co-opted,
violent
like, the Punisher.
Have co-opted, like, The Punisher, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's a very thin line. Do I believe Oscar Isaac is a person that is talented enough as an actor to portray that on screen? Absolutely I do.
Yeah.
I'm not putting any of this responsibility on Oscar Isaac. He's a very talented actor, and I believe he can portray very...
A man struggling.
Complex
with, yeah.
mental faculties, you mm-hmm. know? It's all coming down to the direction and the writing for
yeah.
me. Like, in this weird tightrope act of, do you go too far into glorifying this person with mental illness, or do you go too far to demonizing this person with mental illness, so it demonizes the entire real-life people that are struggling with these things,
yeah.
Things. And that's the biggest thing I think about Moon Knight, and I've heard some talk about it online. I haven't heard very much at all compared to other, like, compared to the dialogue, even... The dialogue about Tilda Swinton playing the Ancient One in Doctor Strange, which talk about, but not very much at all, considering other aspects when that has been relative. I've heard even less discussion about.
Yeah, I've heard more conversation about, like, Ms. Marvel and how it will depict, you know, Muslim Americans. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not certainly trying to instigate any conversation online, but I do think that, at least I can say that I hope that the Marvel Studios is kind of...
Aware and willing to, like...
Exactly.
It's
just aware that there's a very distinct possibility that this conversation could happen, and it's better to happen before the show premieres than after the show premieres and has offended one or two of these people, or caused a kid to go shoot up a Walmart or something. Like, you know what I mean? So that's what I want to think about. You know, I have a really bad track record on this show of saying things like that and then those things happening, and then I have to edit them out. So I'd really appreciate this time just maybe my prophetic powers don't happen.
Yeah,
God.
Oh, man.
Maybe the world can just go back to normal in the next couple of weeks. What do you think about that, America? Anyway.
All right, next
let's keep going.
Next we want to look at something more businessy or something a little more fun.
Gosh, we didn't really talk about anything businessy or fun in the last break. We just talked about Oscar Isaacs and you know, the woke culture. So flip a coin or something, man.
Let's do something a little more businessy.
Sure.
So, Nintendo has purchased Next Level Games. Nintendo doesn't buy a lot of studios.
Yeah.
Just flat out, they don't.
That's real interesting, but Next Level, so I know Next Level. Can you walk us through what titles they've done?
So the most notable thing they've worked on recently would be Luigi's Mansion 3.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But they have a long history with working with Nintendo. They've made up to 7 games, a lot of them being like the Mario Sports games, Super Mario Strikers being one of them.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Have they made any, like, AAA, like, multi-platform games before?
Nope. From their inception, they were very much like, we want to work with Nintendo, we want to work with Nintendo characters.
So, but now they're just officially part of Nintendo.
Right. They are what you would call, for a long time, they were second party.
Okay.
Pokemon is actually a good example of this.
Game Freak, yeah.
Yeah, Game Freak is technically the company that owns them. Nintendo, however, has majority share in the company.
Sure.
And while they don't own them, they do have, like, the right to, like, exclusively they own...
Yeah.
Exclusively, Pokemon can only be on a Nintendo product.
Yeah. if Nintendo says, hey, you guys, Game Freak wants to do this, we're going to say you can, but you need to change this because we're majority shareholders. Like, yeah, stuff like that. Same, yeah. Like Disney and Hulu, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, exactly. That's a good case. The last time Nintendo had actually outright bought a company was in 2012. They bought Retro Studios.
Sure.
Who made the new Metroid trilogy.
Oh.
And the Donkey Kong Country Returns games.
Right.
Like, those, and that was the last company they outright bought. And they bought them before they made anything.
And that was a while ago, right?
Yeah.
That was
2012.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, like, it's just interesting because both Sony and Microsoft have been very much like, we want to buy a ton of studios.
Wow.
And, like, add, and, like, bolster our, like, things. But Nintendo's very much been like, yeah, we'll just keep doing our thing.
They want to up their own brand, dude. Like, when you have, we can't keep saying this. We can only say this different ways so many times. Like, Nintendo doesn't compete with Xbox and PlayStation. They don't need to. Whereas Xbox has never really had, what do you call them? Like, iconic characters. PlayStation got, like, did away with theirs, you know? And why would, there will never be a Mario game on an Xbox or PlayStation.
No.
Ever. Like,
there's no need for it.
He's the most famous video game character.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. And I'm sure at some point in the future, somebody's going to say, well, Nintendo's not going to be able to compete in the console wars. Fuck you, dude. They're going to be able to compete in the console wars because they're Nintendo. It will never change. Like, they don't need to play on the same field that PlayStation and Xbox do.
No, I always consider Nintendo to be a complementary, like, console.
Yeah.
Like, it, like, the Switch is a complimentary thing. Like, you don't use it to play your Call of Duties or anything.
Yeah.
But you use it to play Mario and to play Zelda.
Now, when you put it like that, I have never in my life owned a new Nintendo, television hookup console, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've never owned a Nintendo 64 while that was the main console during the N64 cycle. We'll put it that way. I've never owned a GameCube during the GameCube cycle. I've never owned a Wii. I still don't own a Wii. You know, I still don't own any Wiis or Switches or anything like that. I don't have them. I do now own an N64 and I do own a GameCube, but those weren't, I was always a PlayStation 2 guy, you know? But that being said, I have never in my life of playing video games, which started, I think, when I was 9, not owned a Nintendo system.
Yeah.
I have always had a Game Boy. I've always had a DS. I've always had a Game Boy Advance. I still have a DS, even though I don't have a Switch, which I guess is technically a handheld console. But
yeah.
So it's just, yeah, like, you're like, parents and kids, like, it's there's, you can buy, oh, look at the new insanely violent games that have come out for Xbox. But parents, you don't need to buy that game for your children.
Yeah.
You just have to worry about constantly one of your kids' friends with irresponsible parents giving them a copy of that game and then playing it while you're not watching.
Yeah.
Like, or you can buy Nintendo. And with game like Yoshi's Story and Mario Party and Mario Tennis and The Legend of Zelda is the most violent game Nintendo has. The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's,
for real. Like, and I used to work at GameStop. I would find it all the time of, like, a parent walking in and their kid has a 360.
Yeah.
And they're like, what is a good, like, kids game to play on this? And I'm like, I don't know. And I just have to default by being like, well, they put Sonic games on this and that's about, like, mostly all you get.
There's Lego.
Or they'd outright be like, can we buy Mario on this? It's like, no, you can only buy Mario on a Nintendo console.
What if a parent wanted to come up to me and says, like, hey, I bought my kid a PlayStation 4. What settings can I change to not let this PlayStation play God of War on it? Like, well, there aren't. Like, you just have to make sure your kid doesn't get a console of God of War, or, heaven forbid, you give him, like, a gift card for PlayStation Funbucks someday and he downloads it from the PlayStation Network. You can't do that. You know, like, it's for parents, and it's weird that I mean, sorry to sound like a buzzkill PC gamers out there, or console gamers out there, but, like, from the logic of we're almost 30. From the logic of, like, a parents looking at video game consoles, there's no reason to not buy a Nintendo. You know?
Yeah, for real. And this isn't to, like, be like, oh, children should be kept safe from all that stuff. I grew up playing Mortal Kombat and Grand Theft Auto when they came out.
Yeah, it didn't, didn't hurt us any, but we're saying that we agree with the logic of parents. We're not saying that violent games cause violent children. They don't.
Well, and to kind of, like, to play a little devil's advocate, games nowadays are way more realistic and violent than they were then. Oh, like, let's be fair.
Yeah, like, if Mortal Kombat didn't make any serial killers, I'm saying, you know, like, this is a moot point. Anyway, so yeah, we are getting close to the end of time, though, so if you want to move on to the next, you did promise me at least one fun thing to talk about.
Sure. Jim Belushi went to social media asking for recommendations for good anime to watch after he enjoyed the movie Your Name by Makoto Shinkai.
That's not even, like, one of the big ones.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah, so...
Has he just never done it before?
He's just never
His
watched
His brother
anime.
Was literally in a SNL sketch playing a samurai because he loved samurai so much. Like, you know John Belushi was an anime weeb. I'm going to say that right now. Jim Belushi, like, just further proving that he's the bad Belushi. Like, just now, at the age of 60 or however the fuck old he is, like, discovering anime for the first time, get out of here. You haven't earned what we've earned.
Yeah, this man is, he's gotta be what, in his 50s or 60s now?
Dude was SNL, like, original SNL, and original SNL season cast member, but he was on, like, SNL, like, season 4, like, dude... Dude is not a spring chicken.
Yeah. But yeah, a ton of people have just been berating him with, like, this is the best anime of all time, with titles like Cowboy Bebop, Redline, CM Per Second, Banana Fish. I have no idea what that is.
Redline's bomb. Never heard of Banana Fish.
And even Funimation started, like, being like, oh, we have all these things going on. Check out Dragon Ball Z and Naruto.
What is wrong with reality? Like, this is such a weird thing. This is such a weird thing. It's so weird that I'm more upset about this than anything else we've done. This and a 14-foot-long David Hasselhoff named Big Dave have triggered me more than anything in 2021, and that is not saying nothing. Oh my god.
Yeah.
This is insanity.
Yeah, so it does say he doesn't not know about anime. He apparently did a voice for My Neighbors the Yamadas back when it came out.
That's old. That's so old.
But he is like, this is like my first time really like actively trying to enjoy anime.
Whoa.
so far it says all he's watched is Your Name and Weathering With You.
What a terrible time to ask the internet for anime recommendations, though, because half the fandom is like neo-Nazis and the other half is is furries. Like, this is inarguably the most volatile, divisive time to become an anime fan.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, hey, look at what I just found at the Blockbuster. It's Akira. Want to watch it tonight? That's what being an anime fan used to be. Now it's like, oh man, what about this? What about the white supremacist overtones of going Super Saiyan in Dragon Ball Z?
Oh my
god.
Get
the fuck off of Reddit, dude.
No.
Get out of Reddit.
I miss the days of anime where it was like, because the internet wasn't available to us. So we had to go by recommendations from our friends.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Like, go to a place like a Blockbuster or something. Yeah. And be like, this looks neat.
They didn't, they really didn't exercise, like, what is it, like, ratings advisories in anime sections at video stores?
No.
So you'd find, like, Akira and Ghost in the Shell with, like, three episodes of Gundam Wing next to, like, a collection of Pokemon episodes and stuff like that. Like, it was anarchy. It was a lawless wasteland. Like, I've heard, it never happened to me, but I have heard stories of, like, people whose grandma would, like, rent them an anime, and they would start watching it, and it would be hentai or something.
Oh, it totally has happened to me. Not straight hentai, but, like, I had bought from Echo CDs.
Yeah.
I had bought, it's called, what's it called? El Hazard. Which nowadays, I love. It's a Tenshi Muyo ripoff.
Yeah.
But right away, my mom walks in on this scene of, like, a guy, like, waking up from a nap, and he pulls up the blanket, and there's a girl, like, about to, like, you know, suck him. Like,
there's,
it's like, well, this was a great time for you to walk in, Mom. I'm, like, 9.
At this point. The only thing that close that ever happened to me was I think it was like a couple episodes of Gundam Wing or something.
Sure.
That I rented from a Blockbuster, and there was, or maybe even a Mr. Movies, like how old ago, long ago it was. And I remember there was a trailer before the movie, the episode started, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the VHS, that had a trailer for Cowboy Bebop. And, like, definitely I was like, oh, wow, that's not an anime for children. And I watched it first, like, and I saw that, and then I remember rewatching it and just actively trying to not let my parents be in the room or let their attention be yeah. on something else yeah. based on that trailer, because I know that was going to, like, ruin their impression of, like, everything else. Even though Gundam Wing is nowhere near as, like, gratuitous as Cowboy Bebop is.
No.
Cowboy Bebop isn't even, like, one of the worst ones, frankly.
No.
But it's like...
Cowboy...
Thank goodness it wasn't, like a trailer for Berserk or something. Berserk or was like, out at the time.
Or, like, Elfin Lied or whatever.
Yeah, Elfin Lied. Oh, shit, dude.
Oh, my God. Elfin Lied. I remember having a friend who was like way more into anime than I was, and he was like, we gotta watch this, dude. You gotta check this out. I watched the first episode, and I'm like, this is gross.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got about less than a minute left, so we are gonna have to end it there. I think this time around, to end this episode, let's me and you take turns recommending anime to Jim Belushi.
Okay.
Okay, you go first.
Oh, geez.
One at a time, so we'll alternate.
The Silent Voice.
The Silent Voice. Jim Belushi, look that up. I am going to recommend Overlord to Jim Belushi, because I feel like the guy probably digs skeletons. I don't know. Okay, you go.
Yeah. Elfin Lied.
Yeah, go ahead, Elfin Lied, man.
You're grown.
Naked children? Like, sure, it's totally cool. Naked children that can rip people apart? Yeah, what's not to love? I'm going to recommend Gurren Lagann. Like, let's just... Tip him off the edge and do a completely insane thing.
Okay.
Let's make him watch Gurren Lagann.
Gurren Lagann. All right. I'll do a normie pick for My Hero Academia.
My Hero
Just
Academia.
Just go for it. It's a normie pick.
I guess I'll do the last one. Let's say the last one. This is gonna be the last anime ever recommended to Jim Belushi. What should I pick? Let's go with
Monster Masume.
Yeah, Monster Masume. Just he needs to know that exists. He needs to know what he's getting into.
Yeah, just like this is the worst it gets, and from that, and if you live through that, you're golden.
yeah. So we're going to have to end it there. We'd like to thank, as always, John Wheeler and Sam Dunn for the use of our theme song. What nice guys. They didn't even charge us nothing. We just have to say their names. They're the nice. If they ever start a band again, I'm gonna be right here telling you guys to go listen to them. Eric Castellanos, who is the artist, the Dapper Skull, who made our logo and sells our t-shirts on his Etsy page. You can check out. We're also talking about possible other merchandising things too.
Yeah.
Which could be coming about, although nothing concrete yet. So you can go check that out on Etsy at the Dapper Skull. You can also, of course, while spending time on the internet and not reading the news, you can go check out the Digital Graveyard on Facebook for some of the fun news stories that we talked about, sort of the articles that were the origin of us talking about them, and other weird memes and stupid jokes and stuff. On Twitter at @digital_graveyard and thedigitalgravecast@gmail.com if you have any emails you want to send out for us. That's gonna be it tonight. Bobby, play us out.
I'm never prepared for this one, man.
This is the first time I've seen your reaction, either.
Yeah.
That's something. Well, have a good night, everyone.